Maybe it's a story that our parents told us. Maybe it's a story from a past relationship. Maybe it's a story we saw in a rom-com. Maybe it's a story our friends are telling us every day. But we set up these expectations. Expectations are resentments under construction.
Welcome back to Dating Intentionally. I'm Talia, I'm a dating coach, and I share no-nonsense advice for navigating modern dating with confidence and ease, whether you've been on dozens of dates or you're just getting started. I believe dating can be fun, especially when we throw out the rulebook and focus on our values instead. Today's amazing guest has so many insights on exactly how to do this. I cannot wait for you to hear this conversation. Real quick, before we get into it, you may have noticed, or maybe not, that there was no solo episode this Tuesday. That's because from this week on, I'm moving solo episodes to Patreon, which you can join if you'd like to get more specific personalized dating guidance from me and to chat with a community of daters. The newest solo episode is all about ghosting, what it is, why it happens, when it's okay, what to do about it, and how to not be a ghoster in your dating journey. Because I believe ghosting karma is real, okay? If you don't want people to ghost you, then you shouldn't ghost people. You can listen to that episode and all future solo episodes where I share more personal stories on Patreon. You can join by going to patreon.com/DIPodcast or find the link to join in my Instagram bio. That's at dating.intentionally. In the link in my profile, you will see a Patreon tab there. I can't wait to see you in Patreon and help you with your dating journey on a more personal level. On this episode, you're going to hear from Damona Hoffman, who has been a dating coach for over 15 years. You may have seen her on The Drew Barrymore Show or A&E's #BlackLove and A Question of Love, or maybe you've heard her podcast, Dates and Mates, which she's been hosting for 11 years, or maybe you've read her work in The Washington Post, LA Times, or you've checked out her new book, F the Fairy Tale, Rewrite the Dating Myths and Live Your Own Story. Damona's everywhere, and I started listening to Dates and Mates when I got back on the apps in 2021, and I recently devoured F the Fairy Tale, which came out in January of this year. It's a key read. If you're dating, I truly recommend this book. I listened to it on Audible, and Damona's narrating skills are top-notch. Trust me, I am a narrator snob. She's also really funny. In this conversation, we focus on one of the four dating myths covered in her book. You'll learn why our expectations get in the way, how our biases around race come to play when thinking about who we date, and why we're so obsessed with timelines in early dating and what to focus on instead. Damona shares so many great insights in this conversation, and I know whether you're dating or if you're in a relationship, you'll hear something in this episode that might shift your perspective a bit. Let's do it. Damona, welcome to the Dating Intentionally podcast. I am so excited to have you here. Your book is amazing. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good, Talia. Coming off of, you know, the Valentine's high and living our best lives, right?
Yes, this is the busy season, I feel like, for dating coaches.
We actually call it peak dating season. So it starts the first Sunday of the year. Coincidentally, the same day my book came out, or the same week my book came out.
Yes.
And that's when everybody comes back from holiday time and starts the new year fresh. Like, okay, I don't want to have to explain again to my parents why I didn't bring anybody home for the holidays this year.
Oh gosh.
I need to start the new year dating intentionally, doing something differently. And it's a mad dash from that point all the way up to Valentine's Day.
Yeah. I only started really doing this seriously this past October. So this is my first rodeo in this year of this season.
How you like it?
Love it. I love it. It's awesome. Okay. I have a hinge prompt for you because I love starting these conversations with hinge prompts. I think they're great, you know, get to know you questions. So the one I picked for you is a life goal of mine. So what is a life goal of yours?
A life goal of mine is to have a second home another country. Like,
ooh,
in Rome? Can I do that?
Yes. What? Obviously.
Yes.
Oh, I love
a life goal.
So much. Why Rome?
This is going to sound kind of kooky, but I've just always felt a pull to Rome. And when I went there, I was like, I've been here before. And
I had the same experience. Yes, I love Rome so much. It feels like home to me, like for some reason.
Oh my gosh, same. Yeah. Wait, yeah. Have we known each other in a past life or something?
Maybe. Like when I walk around Trastevere, like I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my life.
I was literally going to say we stayed by the train station. I was like, whatever. And then we moved to Trastevere and I was like, this is my home. This is like, I feel like I've been here. Anyways, I'll see you there.
Yeah, see you there. I love it so much. And okay, so I like did a deep dive into your story through your book, F the Fairy Tale, which I agree, F the Fairy Tale. So you met your husband online, right?
Sure did.
Which site?
Girl, it was in the olden times. It was called Nerve.
My uncle told me about this. He's a Gen Xer. Yeah, he just told me about this like last week.
Only the real ones know about Nerve.
Yes, he is a real one. I remember when I was 10, he took me to Williamsburg when it was still like warehouses. And he's like, this is going to be it. Like you,
if only he'd also given you property.
I know. Oh my
gosh. He had bought a co-op or a condo for you then.
Right. No, right? But, so I did hear of Nerve recently. And so it doesn't exist today, right?
Not as far as I know.
No. Okay. But it was like for the cool people in New York.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it was sold to me as like, it's for like the quirky people, the artists, the creatives. I was like, yeah, that's the intellectual, like that's my guy. So I literally wrote a whole story for myself, a whole narrative, which we often do, which is part of F the Fairy Tale. I even envisioned like I could marry a writer and then he could work from home while I pursued my career and he could be an equal co-parent in raising our children, which back in that time, in your uncle's time, that was very revolutionary.
Weirdly, that is my uncle's life. He is a stay-at-home dad and his wife is a lawyer.
Wow. Okay. Well, it's also my husband's life, coincidentally. But he's a writer and he's really a 50-50 partner. And that's the life that I was building. And really, for so many of my clients, like when I say F the fairy tale, I'm not saying you can't have a fulfilling, loving relationship. I'm saying forget about what other people have told you that you should have. Society at that time didn't tell me, like, you should go for a stay-at-home dad.
Like, right. Yeah, that was not, yeah, I can only imagine. That was not
that was not a thing. But I really took the time to figure out what is this life that I'm building and what would fit well with it. And I knew that I was going to be very dedicated to my career and I knew that I wanted to have kids. And I'm like, okay, so the options are find somebody that doesn't have an ego about being a co-parent, you know, because there still are a lot of traditional gender roles that are, whether we realize it or not, that are impacting our choices in dating. So either that or be comfortable with having a nanny to completely raise your kids, which for me, no shade to, you know,
that's how I grew up,
yeah. Kids, you know, nanny raised folks. It wasn't what I visualized, you know what I'm saying? So I said, I need to strategically change how I'm dating, who I am engaging with, what I even find attractive so that I can build this life and tell the story that I want to tell. That's my fairy tale.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I really appreciate you sharing that. But I can imagine before you got there, you probably struggled with a lot of the things that your clients struggle with, that your listeners struggle with too. And I want to talk about these four myths of dating that you cover in your book. The list myth, the rules myth, the chemistry myth, and the soulmate myth, right? Those are the four ones. So which one did you struggle with the most before you realized you wanted to create your own fairy tale?
All of them, of course.
Which one did you struggle with most though?
you did say that. I'm like,
Yeah, obviously we all struggle with all of them.
I've never been a huge believer in soulmates. That just seemed really improbable to me. So not that one. I'm going to go by process of elimination. I probably actually struggled the most with the rules myth because I felt like if I played the game the way it was supposed to be played, it didn't add up to what I ultimately wanted. And it felt very inauthentic to me, you know, and even like if you've read the rules or just literally followed any like TikTok dating hack, it's like, do this and he'll do that. And it's play the game so you can get the ring. And I was like, I don't know, that feels very inauthentic.
Yeah.
And I just don't like this idea of women chasing a ring anyways. Yeah.
Right. No, it's such a small part of life. And, you know, life is so much bigger than just that moment. You know, I just got engaged. It's like, life goes on. Like,
right. You know? Then it's just like, okay, what's the next thing? What's the next chapter of the story? Because that's just the beginning of the next story.
Yeah.
But the other side of that, like we talked about the rules and the hacks, but then there's also the game, which I talk about in the book, was sort of the rules for guys. And it was just so chauvinistic and it just did so much damage to women's egos, to men's idea about what was attractive. And I still feel like that is prevalent. And I needed to write this book to also give an answer to that. Because there's still so much, like, you know, alpha male.
Yeah, I know.
High quality female.
Oh, yeah. Don't even get me started.
Rhetoric. Yep. Well, we're already started here.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm glad you said the rules, Beth, because that is the one I want to zoom in on. I found that one really interesting. And I think, you know, like you said, when it comes to dating content online, it's so hard to talk about dating and help guide people to date more authentically without leaning on the rules, because rules are everywhere. We love them. And from what I learned, the rules myth is that we can just, like you said, follow a set of steps or a shortcut that leads us to a relationship with an amazing person. And we see these rules played out in movies, reality TV, and on social media. And you mentioned your book about The Bachelor, so I was curious, do you have a favorite dating reality TV show?
Oh, 100%. Love is Blind.
Okay, I literally wrote, what do you think about Love is Blind as the next question. I'm so glad that you said that. So, okay, what do you love about Love is Blind?
First of all, my husband will watch it with me. So it's one of the few shows
great
we can actually watch together. I love any kind of social experiment. So there's a lot of social experiment dating shows that have been around in all the times that I've been coaching and also hosting reality dating shows. I like seeing how people behave in a sort of controlled environment, like seeing how certain choices play out when people are under pressure. And so I love that about Love is Blind, because it's like taking the whole process of dating, and really it's quite similar to online dating today, right? Even though you have a picture, like, you don't really know what that person looks like.
Right. Or
it's kind of opposite, like you find out what they sound like later when you actually see what they look like too, usually. But it's so fascinating to me to see it all done in such a pressure cooker, like when you really consider they've only known these people like 10 days and they're getting engaged and then they're going off on a romantic vacation and they're literally just meeting these people.
It's wild. So, it's so wild.
I love all of those things about it. And I love also that I think it gives a lot of people hope. Is that corny to say?
No, I think hope. I think we need to like destigmatize hope in dating. I mean, come on. Yes.
Yeah.
It's fine to have hope. I mean, I think I love Love is Blind, but when I was watching this current season, I realized like how important your environment is in the real life dating process that we experience, because you're in these pods and you only have each other to interact with. They're bringing in like sushi and like playing cards and all these like little things, but you don't have other people, you don't have the environmental like factors of like how they're going to react to a waiter, like maybe bringing the wrong dish, or how they're going to react to seeing another hot girl like 10 feet away. Because this season there was like some of that when they met. Like you miss all that, and then you're making all these decisions, but you're completely missing out on all these environmental things that we get in real life dating.
Yeah. And that's why I also love the progression of it, of like it's sort of three different shows in one. There's the pods, and then there's the honeymoon, and then there's okay, now it's really real life. It's sort of graduated. But I often say this to my clients, that a good date is not just reliant on the conversation, that you have other inputs, you have, as you were saying, something to react to and the environment to bounce off of, and also sometimes an activity to do. So I do love it when they get further in and they have more activities.
Yeah.
But it's a social experiment. It's very contrived. Like, that is not how it will play out in the real world. So it's very, thankfully. It's just, thankfully, it's very fascinating
but it's
to me.
So
I love
watch.
That one.
Yeah,
I love
glad.
That. I also love Couples Therapy on Showtime, which is not a reality dating show.
I never seen it. I think I'd like it.
It's literally just couples therapy. But Dr. Orna Goralnik, who is like one of my favorite guests I've ever had on Dates and Mates, she was on last season. And she is just one of the best psychoanalysts you will ever see work. And just watching her get in there with a couple and find the exact thing that's going to make somebody reconsider how they're thinking or the way they're treating their partner. It's just fascinating to watch. And you I'll realize that everybody's messy. Like you just realize, you know, like that's another kind of thing that inspired F the Fairy Tale. What is it supposed to feel like? I get this question on Dates and Mates all the time. Well, I like this person, but I don't know. Do I love this person? Is this person the one? How do I know? And if we're chasing an idea of perfection or we don't have that understanding of everybody's a little bit messy, then we're pursuing a relationship that isn't real, that doesn't actually exist in the real world. And that's why it's so important to start with the addressing the list myth and the mindset that you have going into dating, because that mindset is going to follow you throughout the course of your relationship.
100%. I definitely had to learn that the hard way in my process. So I want to ask you, how do you know when someone is stuck on the rules myth in dating? What are the signs?
Well, one, they're very impatient with my process.
Okay. Good sign.
Like I always tell people before, I do a 3-month coaching program. And I'm like, look, most of the people who go through this program end up finding their person either by the end of the program or within the 3 months after the program. But it's going to feel really exciting at first. You're going to have 4 weeks of a lot of activity and things are going to feel really different and really thrilling and new. And then you're going to get to the point where it's sticky and you're going to have to push through some things. And that may be like 4 weeks of pushing through. And a lot of times I'll get messages from my clients in that 4-week period, even though I've told them it's coming. Where it feels like, okay, I don't have the same volume of messages coming in. I mean, you experienced this too when you were doing your online dating experiment. And the volume of messages you get when you first sign up for an app, in the matches that you get, it can be really thrilling, somewhat overwhelming, but it peters out. And then you're kind of left with yourself. And you're right. Like, what am I doing here? Well, that's when we refine and you know, we fine tune to figure out it's not just a volume business. It's not about how many people you're talking to. It's about connecting with the right people. And so I always will say, it's going to get sticky here. And inevitably people will message me and say, I don't think this is working. I made a mistake. I think I want to back out. What else am I supposed to do? Should I just jump to another? And then they're like, what's the solution? What's the rule? Right. What's the hack? What's the fix? How do I get out of this feeling? You don't. You go through the feeling.
Right. Yeah. It's hard. It can be really hard to remember that. That's like, this is part of the process and the process is going to take as long as it takes.
And you're signing up for a process. I mean, there's a very deliberate reason why I am a coach and not a matchmaker. And I think matchmaking is a great tool, but it's different. I want to help people transform and use dating as a tool for that. And if I just listen to you tell me all the things you want on your list and I hand you a match and you're like, oh, great. I ordered off of the great dim sum cart in the sky. You have delivered me my my perfect dish. I think that robs people of some of the exploration.
Right. There's so much learning in that part. There's so much learning in the messiness. That's the part that I liked. And I think that's why I had so much fun dating is I love self-discovery. And I realized that dating was such a channel for that. And so I didn't really care if my dates didn't pan out that much. I was like, I'm learning so much. And it really excited me. And I'm trying to help other daters embrace that as well.
Talia, I wish everyone felt that way. Yeah. But it's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard. I don't want to say it's work because then nobody's going to.
No, well, yeah.
But it does require you to be really present. And I know what's on the other side of that. And you know what's on the other side of that. But it's hard when you're in the weeds mm-hmm. to be able to see that.
Yeah. And something else I run into, I'm sure you run into this, like when I talk to my listeners, there's so much focus on the timeline of what happens and when. It's like the third date, he said this. And on the fifth date, we went to his house. And on then this date, but then eighth date, why isn't he saying this? And it's like, is all this focus on the timelines like part of the rules myth in your mind?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. How can we like, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, it's just our brains are wired for stories. Right. So we want to get to the end of the story. Maybe it's a story that our parents told us. Maybe it's a story from a past relationship. Maybe it's a story we saw in a rom-com. Maybe it's a story our friends are telling us every day. But we set up these expectations. And Anne Lamott says, and I quote in my book, expectations are resentments under construction. As soon as we start attaching an expectation, it's like, well, just prepare to be disappointment.
Yes.
Just prepare for disappointment because there's just no way that your expectation can be met. And again, it takes you out of the present. And that's 90% of my job is just getting people to be here. Just be in the present. Right. Be on this date right now. Don't be
projecting
ahead.
The future and like, the whole thing.
That's where anxiety comes from. When we're projecting into the future, we're ruminating on the past. Be right here. And that's going to take away a lot of those feelings.
Yes. I mean, I remember learning this in therapy, right? My therapist was like, your expectations are going to disappoint you. I spent a lot of time in therapy talking about expectations. And even in my relationship now, like, you know, I'm engaged and I'm like actively thinking of all these expectations coming up. And I have to challenge them myself and be like, wait, where is this coming from? Is this what's going on here? But it's improved my relationship a lot.
I'm going to make a guess here, Talia, that there's another part of that equation where it's not just having the expectations. It's having the expectations and not articulating them to the person who's supposed to be meeting them. So I would bet that there's some learning in there of communicating to your partner what your, let's put away expectations, but like what your hopes are, what's your dream, right? And then somebody can sort of support your hopes and dreams, and it doesn't become an expectation. It more becomes a request or an invitation to join you in that pursuit.
Or even just an awareness. Yeah, just putting it out there. So something I really loved in your book is that so much of our rules are ingrained in us, and we don't really challenge them or think about them, especially being open to dating outside of our race or desired races. So what are some ways we can discover these rules that we didn't even know we had? Because you talk about this in the book, and I found this so awesome. I love the way you presented this in the chapter.
We just went right for it, didn't we?
Yeah.
yes. Okay, everybody stay with me for a second. So first, I should just give a little background for anyone just listening to the audio of this. I am biracial. I am Black, Christian. My mom is like a Black Christian woman. My dad is a white Jewish man. I grew up in the Midwest where there aren't a lot of either of those, let alone a mix of both of them. My extended family is super diverse. My sister-in-law is Indian American. My stepmother is Mexican American, and on. I feel like I'm sort of uniquely positioned in this conversation because I have seen how my life has been expanded by knowing people of other races, cultures, religions. And it works for me. And I feel like I learn, we were talking about learning through dating. I learn through those interactions. It makes me a more compassionate and fully realized person. Now, I don't say for all of my clients, like, you must date outside your race. I've gotten a lot of heat for that. Mm-hmm. And I think people, and also I just have to say this, first of all, people also think that when I say this, that I'm somehow just excluding people of color from the conversation, which is weird to me because I am not. But like I had a friend who brought, who's another dating coach who brought this conversation back up years after we started this conversation in June of 2020. And he's like, why is it okay for Black women to be like, I have to have Black love, I have to date a Black man? But if a white woman says, I have to date a white man, then that's racist. And I'm like, it's not different. However, there's something that you have to acknowledge in America and mm-hmm. in a lot of other countries, power and privilege certain races or religions hold.
Right.
So now I'm taking a long, that's a little context. I'm taking a long way around to say.
No, I appreciate it. Yes.
I think there's a lot of self-discovery. If you are open to dating people who are different than you are, and you are willing to examine those questions, as I talk about in the book, like I was working with an Indian American woman who was like, okay, I need to date an Indian guy. And I start unpacking, well, why? And we get down to the core of her family relationship was of the utmost importance to her. And mm-hmm. they had certain beliefs and expectations going back to the centuries of fairy tales of stories that told her that it was important for her to marry within her race, her religion. I just like that exploration of unpacking the what's underneath it. Because sometimes, and I didn't say this in the book, my original writing job was for J-Date. I was the...
Wow, okay.
I was a blogger for J-Date, and I would get all these Jewish mothers who were like, can you help me with my son? Oh. And I'm like, if they call me, I will help them. But I'm not doing this for you because your expectations, there's the E word again, mm-hmm. your expectations for him are not necessarily his expectations or what will necessarily make him happy.
Right.
So sometimes we have to grapple with that, like with our societal expectations, with our parental expectations, with our self expectations. And if you're willing to use dating as an experiment, as we've been saying this whole episode, there's a lot of interesting discovery, self-discovery, if you're willing to take
right.
that journey.
Yeah, I love this conversation so much, like around just challenging what we think we'd be attracted to or challenging the expectations that are external of like, you know, from society or family. I think for my parents, I am Jewish. I grew up pretty religious. We're not religious anymore, but like my parents, I think, accepted really early on that I was probably not going to end up with a Jewish man. They didn't love it at first. And they're like, all right. Like, they came around to it. I'm lucky. I feel lucky that this hasn't, like, impacted my relationship with them. But it's hard. This stuff is hard to navigate. It's not – there's no, like, silver bullet hack shortcut rule that will just make it all tied up in a neat little bow.
Yeah. It's funny because I distinctly remember saying to my dad – I'm not going to marry a Jewish guy. It's not going to happen, so you can just get over it. I literally, yeah. quote unquote, said that. And Talia Hoffman is my
yeah.
married name. I did marry a Jewish guy. Actually, interestingly,
so
he's half Jewish. And the Hoffman is his non-Jewish side. But everybody's oh, you found a nice Jewish guy. And I'm like, trust me, it was not the goal.
That's so funny.
But I mean, I will say there are a lot of cultural similarities that, you know, I didn't even realize were probably part of what connected us, that we could kind of speak the same language, but I wasn't in pursuit of that. And my ideas about what I needed in a relationship and what I was, you know, maybe pushing away were also totally misguided. So that's
right.
why
the
exploration of like, what do I truly need and why is so valuable.
Yes. And you talk a lot about this, that in, I think the list chapter and the rules chapter focus a lot on this, like values, like honing down on your, what it's like your three must haves and your one deal breaker. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You read very, very carefully.
I take notes. I'm like, I'm into it. Also, I'm obsessed with this stuff. Please. It's like easy. It's so fun. Okay. So something I share a lot of these messages with my listeners too about being open-minded, challenging your stories and like expectations. But whenever this topic of like be more open comes up, it somehow twists into lower your standards. Where is the line between being open and realistic and then actually lowering your standards? And I'm not talking about that within like, I'm just mean like you don't have to swipe right on the classically attractive people to you, right? It's like you can be open to all kinds of people.
Yeah, I get this question a lot. Is it settling if I don't get everything on my list? And I'm more about, let's refine what is on that list and why it's important to you. Because there are things that I had to be more open about that mm-hmm. I now realize were completely irrelevant. Like, For example, I said, you know, I really like yoga. Like, yoga is a really big part of my life. Still is, 20 years later. I need a guy who does yoga. Like, if a guy doesn't do yoga, it's just not gonna work.
I had the same thing with snowboarding and skiing.
And?
My fiance does not ski, but he did take a ski lesson with me, and I really love him for that.
Yay! Yeah, and it's like the openness. I think it's more about the openness to sharing experiences with you. And also, for me, I drilled down to realize it was about the freedom for me to continue to pursue the things that made me happy. I'd seen a lot of friends that lost themselves in relationships, some of whom I used to go to yoga with. It's like, oh, I can't go to yoga now. I have a boyfriend. Like, good for you. But I didn't need him to do yoga. He can't touch his toes. God bless him. And he has no interest. But he was really into football at the time. He's not so much anymore. But he could go watch football for 6 hours on a Sunday. I'd not be bothered with that at all. Go to yoga, have brunch with my friends, and we're living very fulfilling parallel lives. I mean, you can't be living parallel lives with your partner all the time, but I feel like there's too much pressure on our partners to be our exact match on everything. We're trying to date ourselves, and that's not the goal. You're trying to date someone who complements your life and who, as you said, shares your values and your goals. But ultimately, research shows that you really only need to have two or three common interests with your partner to be compatible. And we put all this pressure on ourselves to like check every box. And then we're like, oh, I've settled. He can't snowboard. What am I going to do? I
go skiing by myself and have a great time.
And have a great time. Because like, I do. Are you hanging out like on the slopes? You're not really like skiing with a person. Like, I'm not doing yoga, chatting.
I could get into a whole thing about how like I grew up doing it and it's like a family memory and all this stuff. And it's, but it's still meaningful to me, even though he doesn't do it with me. That lack of skiing in our relationship doesn't make it mean less, you know, that I have like a connection to the sport. So what you're saying is being more realistic doesn't mean we're settling and deleting things off our checklist and honing them down into what really matters does not equal settling.
Correct. And also, just if there's anything on anyone's list right now who's listening that is anything physical, just go ahead and cross that off right now. Because
I agree.
There's so many more factors, right?
People push back like, but I can only go on a date if I'm attracted to them, Damona. Like, what do I do? You know, that's, so you hear that?
Yeah. And I'm not saying don't be attracted. And I think people also confuse when I say chemistry is a myth. I'm not saying you're not supposed to be attracted to the person. I'm saying don't expect for lightning bolts to strike you and the heavens to open and the angels to sing to cue to you that this is your person. Real chemistry is a slow burn.
Yes.
Real connection takes time to develop and should develop on multiple levels, not just physical. That's all I'm saying with the chemistry myth. I'm not saying like if you get the ick, you should still date them. I'm saying you should stay curious. And if you're curious about that person, you should go on another date with them.
Yes.
And see what develops from there.
So speaking of dating apps and like just the swiping, do you think dating apps would work better if there was more focus on values overall? Like in the prompts, just in the process?
No. Hmm. No. Let me not get into a dissertation about dating apps. I'm really bullish on dating apps. Obviously, that's how I met my husband. That's how the majority of my clients have met their partners, right? I think we as a society broke dating apps. We broke them.
I agree.
Because you agree? Okay. Here's my take. I want to hear yours.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that online dating worked a lot better in the time when my husband and I did it. There was more information in the profile. You spent more time crafting your own profile and then therefore reading other people's profiles before you even reached out. And then there was this sort of online courtship period, and then you moved offline. Since Tinder, and I'm not blaming Tinder because I'm grateful for Tinder for expanding the reach of dating apps, destigmatizing it, and making it so accessible. So ease of use became prioritized. It's free. I can just pull a couple photos from whatever, my Facebook, I think at the time, and I'm online and I can be talking to people. Barrier for entry, super low, but flooded the apps with people, many of whom were not dating intentionally, were not doing it with purpose, were there for many different reasons, a lot of fake profiles, a lot of just general trash. And so people started to scan profiles, just swipe on all the profiles. They were not doing it with intention. There wasn't enough information on the profile. There no longer is enough information on the profile to make any kind of a decision about whether you want to see somebody. There's just not enough information. So now that all has to happen in the DMs, and that's a terrible place to really assess if somebody's a good match for you or not.
Yes. Yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, my take is that like dating apps, that culture of basically just you're behind a screen. People aren't real until you meet them. Like they don't feel as real, even with social media, right? Like when you're responding to a comment or a DM, it's like still a screen. And then I feel like we don't give as much respect to these kinds of conversations as we would on the phone or in person. I think people, it's like gives us permission to act a little shittier, which is really annoying. And then I think the people who really cared were kind of driven off the apps because of this type of behavior was so prevalent. It's not that the good ones are gone. It's just like the good ones got fed up earlier and don't stick around as long. Maybe, I don't know.
I think they're still there, but I think lot of people are burned out. People are burned out and disappointed and frustrated. And I agree with everything that you said. And I still think that apps are a great way to meet people, but we have to do it differently.
Yeah.
Like you can't stay in the DMs for a week or two and really assess who somebody is. But on the other side, I think some of dating started happening too quickly. So people would just match and then be like, oh, let's meet up. And then that's a really quick road to burnout as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious.
Like, it wasn't for me.
You're the one that went on 200 dates.
Yes. It wasn't for me, but I am definitely like, it's like a personality mix of like me being an extrovert. I love to go out. Like I work from home all day. There's no way I'm staying home in the evening every mm-hmm. day. Like absolutely mm-hmm. no way. I can't. I'd go crazy. So I love going out. I love exploring. So I think dating and me were like a good match, you know, just the process. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know not everyone's like that though. And it's after rejection, I can see how it gets really hard. I think I was doing more rejecting than getting rejected. I don't know.
Well, I think it's also in how you look at rejection. It's like, and I talk about this in F the Fairy Tale too. Like if you are looking at everyone who's not your ultimate match, whether you're quote rejected in the DMs or in the initial swipe or on the date or after the first date or after the fifth date, wherever that happens, it's that person was not in alignment. And
right.
That's not necessarily you. If there's a pattern, and maybe you and we need to talk about it. But if it's different reasons or it's just not a fit, I don't really look at that as a rejection. I kind of look at that as just feedback.
Right. Right. It's neutral. It's just kind of, okay, it happened. It's going to happen. You can move on.
Yeah. But I know that that's hard to do, especially yeah. when it's happening at scale. Like when you are going on 200 dates in a year,
yeah.
there's a lot of highs and a lot of lows. So previously, people's minds are blown when I tell them that, like, when I started coaching 17 years ago, most of my clients were probably going on one date a quarter. And that was good. That was good. And then I was like, okay, I think I can get you up to one date a month. And it was like, great. This is great. And by the way, my success record hasn't really changed that mm-hmm. much. So in 12 dates a year, people were finding the same amount of success that now That's the amazing. Expectation is if they're not going on two dates a week, it's a failure. It's not working. Dating apps aren't working. Because again, our expectation is like, oh, volume, more and more and more and more and more. But then what is the cost of that?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you are having that, like, oh, I'm getting excited about this person. No, it's not going to work out. Oh, mm-hmm. I got ready for this date. Oh, they canceled on me last minute. When you're feeling that, instead of once a month or twice a month, you're feeling that 2 to 3 times a week, our nervous system can't handle that. We are not wired for that.
Yeah, we're not. I think I had a lot of emotional detachment from this process because I wasn't looking for a relationship for most of the time. That's why another reason why I was able to like have that stamina, you know, the dating process. I just like, I think a lot of it is women put a lot of pressure on themselves too in terms of the timeline of like, oh, I want to have kids. I want to, you know, get the whole thing. So it's like, you know, you feel that time ticking away. So I can imagine if I was dating later in my 30s, I may have gone about it a little differently or felt differently because I entered at 29, the dating pool. So it was a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is different. And that's a very real pressure.
Yeah.
The biological pressure. I'm a huge fan of freezing of eggs if you can afford it or your company can supplement. Like a lot of companies, people don't even realize, a lot of companies have, you know, reproductive services that they will pay for.
Yeah.
Get that money, y'all.
Get those policies. Exactly. I know we're just about out of time and I had like so many more questions for you. So maybe you'll have to come back for round two. But one thing I want to ask you just to wrap up is what do you want to see more of in today's dating culture?
I want to see more empathy.
Yes.
I know you're not surprised by that answer, having read
it. I love the answer so much.
But I really would. I hear both sides, right? On Dates and Mates, people will say, I hate being ghosted. And then I'll say, well, let's see your DMs. Let's see who you're matching with. And realize that sometimes they're doing some of the ghosting themselves when they haven't thought of somebody as clearing the bar or being a serious contender for them.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could approach dating with more empathy, more awareness of the other person's perspective, and also more empathy for ourselves, because we do get so wrapped up in the quote results of this dating experiment mm-hmm. that we're all in, this love is blind experiment of the world, then we start to tell ourselves stories about our lovability, right. our dateability, that ultimately hurt us more in the long run than help us. So
yes,
more empathy, more empathy, more empathy.
I love it. Thank you so much. This has been amazing. Where can we find you? Where can we get more Damona?
You can get more Damona on the socials at Damona Hoffman. I do Dates and Mates every Tuesday for 11 seasons, which you can listen to wherever you're listening to this podcast right now, or at datesandmates.com. And I have some other goodies there at datesandmates.com, like a profile starter kit. And I have a new meditation collection and things that can help you on your dating journey too.
Wow. Thank you so much for all your insight, Damona. This has been amazing.
Thank you for having me, Talia.
Thank you so much for listening. I really could have talked to Damona forever. I had so many more questions. If you weren't already planning on grabbing or borrowing a copy of F the Fairy Tale, I hope you're convinced now. That was just a taste of what's in the book. One of my favorite takeaways from this conversation is what Damona said about how we define success in online dating and what we expect to happen. Just because you see people out there in the world going on several dates a week or month from the apps does not mean that's the only way or best way to date. It doesn't mean that's what success looks like. And I completely agree with what Damona said about how going on one date a month can be a huge success. It honestly only takes one date with someone new to potentially find your next great match. It can happen at whatever pace feels right or is feasible for you. I also really appreciate Damona's take on race and dating and want to reiterate how important it is to question your own preferences and check them against your values, which are arguably way more important than what someone looks like on the outside. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen if you date outside your type? You never know. Once again, thanks for listening. I'd love it if you share this episode with someone who's navigating dating and might need a little confidence boost or some tough love. If any of these episodes have helped you in your journey, you can help me by leaving a stunning review on Apple or giving Dating Intentionally 5 stars on Spotify. I'd really appreciate it. Once again, I'm Talia. This has been Dating Intentionally, and I'll catch you next time.